Welcome to Hack the Entrepreneur, the show which reveals the fears, habits, and inner battles behind big-name entrepreneurs and those on their way to joining them. Now here is your host, John Naster.
Hey, this is Hack the Entrepreneur. Thank you so much for joining me yet again today. I'm your host, John Naster, and we've got a really, really interesting and awesome guest for you today, so I'm really looking forward to jumping into it. So let's do it. My guest today is a Polish-born immigrant who moved to the United States at the age of 3, and he grew up in the Chicago suburbs. As a kid, he spent much of his time on forums and chat rooms during those early days of the World Wide Web. Now, here's where things get interesting. Due to his family's financial situation, he couldn't afford to buy computer games. So, to get them, he downloaded them, quote-unquote, maybe illegally, from the internet. And one fateful time, his family's computer became infected with malware. Frustrated that his computer's anti-malware didn't prevent the infection, he took to seeking help from security message boards to troubleshoot and remove malware by hand. While developing his own tiny solution to this problem, he realized other people might have this too, and they could use it. So he founded Malwarebytes. In early 2008, his company's first product was released. What began in his suburban home is now an international company with 750 employees and is used by more than 60,000 businesses and millions of people worldwide. Now, let's hack Marcin Kliczynski. Now, right before we jump into this interview with Marcin, I do want to share with you today's sponsor, Pantheon. Now, whether you're developing your personal brand, building your own business, or working for a large organization, your personal presence is critical to your success. This is why you need Pantheon. Pantheon helps marketers, small businesses, and entrepreneurs develop results faster. Pantheon is the leading website operations provider, powering more than 285,000 websites and trusted by small businesses, startups, and some of the most well-known brands in the world, like Coach and Yale University. Pantheon's WebOps platform helps you build, manage, and optimize your most important brand asset, your website. So whether you're just beginning to build your dream or are already well on your way, Pantheon can help you deliver the best online experience and future-proof your digital presence. If you are ready to get results faster, Pantheon wants to help. You can sign up right now for free and only pay for a plan when your site goes live. Learn more at pantheon.io/hack. That's pantheon.io/hack. We are back with another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur. And today we have a very, very, very special guest. Marcin, welcome to the show.
Oh, well, thank you very much for having me.
Absolutely my pleasure. Absolutely my pleasure. I think this is going to be a lot of fun, so I'm excited to just jump into it.
Let's do it.
All right, let's start here, Marcin. As an entrepreneur, can you tell me, what is the one thing that you do that you feel has been the biggest contributor to your successes so far?
That's a tough question. So I'd say, and this might sound pretty bad, but I definitely steal a lot of ideas. And I'm a big fan of not reinventing the wheel. And I feel just a lot of great companies have been built. A lot of great entrepreneurs have been around and have lent their time to me. You know, why not steal some of their ideas and make them our own and implement them in our own way? And I think that's been pretty successful for us. I mean, a lot of the best ideas, I think, came from just talking to other entrepreneurs and what are they doing?
Which makes sense, because you're right. Like, most things you're probably trying to accomplish have been done before, so why not follow from that?
Agreed.
You can even learn what not to do by seeing what people have done as well.
Absolutely.
Awesome. So you're, 11 years into Malwarebytes at this point? I would love to go back, if we could, Marcin. I want to hear sort of like, how did this come about?
Sure. So as with all stories, I suppose, it started with a problem. And I was a teenager at the time. We had a shared family computer at home, and it got infected with malware. I was downloading a video game. We were not a well-off family, so unfortunately, I had to pirate the video game, and we all know what comes with that. So I got the computer infected, didn't really know what to do. And like anybody else, I Googled my symptoms and found a message board online just full of volunteers. I mean, to this day, I consider them superheroes. Of just people willing to help somebody like me. And I posted my problem and somebody came to my rescue and gave me a page, well, I guess a pamphlet full of information, 30 pages of steps to go take on. And after 3 days of going through all of that, the computer was finally back to a healthy state. But two questions lingered. One was, I had an antivirus. I was paying for it. Why didn't it stop the problem from happening? And number two was, why couldn't it fix the problem after the fact? So I set out to solve those issues and met my co-founder on the internet in the same message board. And imagine telling, you know, your mom, you're a 17-year-old kid, you're working with a 30-year-old guy on the internet building an antivirus. It was quite an interesting story to tell. And so that's really how Malwarebytes was founded. And one other interesting tidbit, I suppose, is the name Malwarebytes itself was stolen, I suppose. Somebody actually gifted me the domain name. I thought it was a pretty terrible name at the time. And here we are 12 or 11 years later, and it's still going strong. So again, back to the credit to those superheroes, how amazing they were.
Somebody gifted you the domain.
Yep. Hey, you're doing some really cool stuff. Here's malwarebytes.biz. And I went, well, that's stupid.
Wow. Who would have ever thought that 11 years later, it would have come to this?
Yeah, no kidding.
So just, I guess, as a non-technical person, sorry, and there's a lot of us probably listening, malware and antivirus, what's the difference?
Yeah, a lot of it has become synonymous. And today, a threat is a threat is a threat. And if it infects your device, we're trying to protect you from it. So I think in this day and age, it really has blurred together. But malicious software or malware, as we call it, is really the superset of all things out there, including viruses. And again, today, I don't think it matters as much. But in the early days of Malwarebytes, we were trying to compete with some of the biggest gorillas in the space. Think Symantec and Norton, think McAfee, think Trend Micro. Companies that had thousands of people, some had billions of dollars in resources to spend. We just couldn't compete. So what we said is we were going to solve the problem in two ways. One, we were going to come in and clean up after the fact. So when an antivirus failed, we were going to clean it up. And that's really what got us onto the map. And number two was we were going to be the wingman. The turbo to the engine, the seatbelt to the airbag. We weren't going to try to replace what these guys were doing. We were trying to augment it and make them better. So that's really where the term anti-malware came out, was just a function of differentiation. Today, it really doesn't even matter. And in fact, we renamed the product Malwarebytes Anti-Malware just to Malwarebytes, because that's what we are. That's what we do. So it's a very nuanced description, but that's kind of a history of the terminology.
So you're right. You were taking on some like giant companies at this time. I like the idea of not reinventing the wheel. I'm going where things have happened before, but where do you get this level of, I mean, there's a level of cockiness to a teenager who has this problem from downloading a video game, solves it, and then thinks, I can take on Symantec.
Yeah, I'd say less cockiness, more accident, as with all of these things, right? I was passionate about helping people. I was passionate about programming. I was definitely intrigued by how these antivirus companies just decided to lay down and reap the rewards of what they've already built and not really advance. So even today, I mean, we spend an exorbitant amount of money on research and engineering because that's what we do. I mean, that's what we're in, this cat and mouse game against the criminals. And it's not going to be a sales and marketing team that drives the differentiation with Malwarebytes. It's going to be the products we build and the technology we build. So I think it was more about the passion of just helping the world, of taking on the bad guys and intrigue around these antivirus companies just fat and happy.
And so, I mean, it's to put it sort of in context, we're having this conversation, obviously 2019, 11 years after you just have this idea in your parents' house. Now you're talking about spending tens of millions of dollars or more on research and development. Somewhere between here, there's been huge transformations. But how far along, Marcin, would you say you were when you realized that you could actually turn this into something real?
Oh, that's a really good question. When we launched the first version of the product in January of 2008, so now 11 and some years ago, it was really a pet project. And even maybe today, my mom still considers it a pet project. But you know, I it was definitely not something I took seriously. We were doing it because we were passionate. We were doing it because we wanted to help the world and build something cool. And so in August, or rather by August, 8 months later, we were starting to turn some serious cash out of this business. And of course, reinvesting it in appropriate places, but it was growing quite quickly. I was due at the University of Illinois for a computer science degree in August, and the company starting to turn over serious cash, you start having doubts of whether you should be heading to the University of Illinois. So after a 15-second conversation with my mother, you know, she already started packing me. But I'd say sometime at my tenure in the University of Illinois, it started getting pretty serious, where we had opened an office in the Bay Area, and here I am in Champaign, Illinois. For many of you who have not been there, it's surrounded by 2 hours of corn in each direction. So not exactly a business-friendly environment. But the university was super supportive in helping me kind of build this. They let me take time off in some regards. So I think it was more of a gradual transition than it was a kind of a flick of a switch. So as the years at the University of Illinois progressed, I was getting more and more involved and invested in this company and realized, hey, this could be pretty serious. And actually, right in my senior year, it started to get very serious, to the tune of millions of dollars of turnover. So it was kind of timed appropriately where I was ending the University of Illinois and we had an office in the Bay Area. And so I moved out here and have been out here ever since. And it's become very serious, as you can imagine, for me.
Wow. So you finished school at the University of Illinois.
Yeah. I mean, if you can call a GPA under 3 finishing.
It's worked out for you, we could say.
It definitely worked out. I have no regrets.
So what was the thinking of starting or like opening the office out in the Bay Area? Obviously not Illinois, but there's probably lots of other places.
Yeah, I don't think it's one of those things where you have to be a company in the Bay Area to be hip. I actually think there's a lot of benefits of being in Chicago, being in Austin, being in Tampa, being in Boston even. Bay Area is excruciatingly costly rent to the people, to the cost of living and so on. So I almost have some minor regrets of maybe not being in Chicago, but it all happened when I met a co-founder out here and he basically said, Marcin, we're doing some really great stuff, but we need to start hiring a sales team. We need to start hiring a support team. And those people can't all necessarily work remote. We need to establish a beachhead. And so that's what we did out here in San Jose, California, and now Santa Clara, California. So that was really the genesis of why we're out in the Bay Area. And frankly, as I'm leaving the University of Illinois, we have 200 people. So I can't be, CEO can't be out in Chicago. If I wanted to take this seriously, I had to move my life out here, and that's what I did.
200 people while graduating.
Yeah, it's, you know, as I reflect, that was pretty crazy, huh?
Yeah, well, I mean, at least a business degree might have been.
You know, I definitely think about that from time to time. Here I am doing computer science, so at least now I can tussle with the engineers. But a business degree might have been more handy in the first couple years.
But it might have also been hard to be not getting the best grades from professors trying to teach a business, and you've got...
Yeah, well, and so people actually ask, did you learn anything at the University of Illinois? And I'll tell you, 100%. I mean, just how to organize my time even was a lesson in itself. But computer science involves very logical thinking. There was a lot of theory. There was a lot of implementation. I mean, it certainly wasn't a waste of time. And even today, it helps me make better decisions as we are a product and engineering company. On top of that, the relationships I built, and even to this day, I credit my friends and my fraternity for keeping me as humble as I guess I am. And part of it is because they'd say, well... Or I'd say, hey, you know, I've got this awesome podcast with John later today. And they'd say, well, we don't really care. You're still just a normal guy and we're going to get beers after. So very humbling experience.
Yeah, fair enough. And so when this started, you took on a second co-founder?
Yeah, so the founding story goes as follows. Bruce was the guy I met on the message board. He was my true co-founder, the guy that I went to battle with, and we built the first version of the product. Doug came on to help with some engineering, and Doug was based out of New York, and he was actually a PhD student for physics at Princeton, if you can believe that. And then Marcus was the guy out here in the Bay Area, and that all happened over the course of about a year and a half, 2 years. But I consider that really the founding team, just because each had a major contribution in how we ended up here. So Marcus was out here in the Bay Area. He held management roles at Google and a couple of other companies and said, hey, I'm going to build out an office here in the Bay Area, and we're going to hire some sales support and product teams and so on.
At what point, you bootstrapped it until what point?
To today. So even though we've taken $80 million in investment, it's really gone all to employees, founders, and previous investors. So the company's never put any money on the balance sheet. And a lot of that's been just how, I mean, look, take a Midwest kid out of the Midwest and drop him in the Bay Area. And I looked around and I went, what the heck is going on here? People are spending money hand over fist just to grow. And I didn't think that's how you built a business. And so maybe that's some of that Midwest mentality, but we've been cash flow positive practically since the very beginning of the company's history and have been reinvesting that cash forward. So bootstrapped since the beginning, I guess, if you could say that.
Wow. Impressive. So now again, 11 years on, you as the CEO and one of the co-founders with obviously, I don't know how many employees you have at this point.
We're about 750, I think. Yeah.
750. What does a CEO's day look like?
Well, every day is different. It's like a box of chocolates. I definitely spend a lot of time with customers. So I travel New York to Boston. Our business is split into half consumer, half enterprise. So we have a lot of consumers using the free product. They also pay for the subscription to protect themselves. But they also go to work. They have similar challenges. And then some of the biggest companies in the world buy Malwarebytes for their organization. So I spend a lot of time with them trying to understand their pains. Funny enough, they're incredibly understaffed and under-resourced even today. So you see all of these breaches in the news, all the company hacks, and it's pretty evident from me going on site and understanding how under-resourced, under-monetized, and understaffed they are. So I spend a lot of time with customers. I spend a lot of time telling the story of Malwarebytes. So just this week and last week, I went to an event and told my story to an audience of 700 people. I'm obviously speaking with you today. And then I work a lot on the innards of the product and the technology, just helping understand what direction we should be going to and passing on customer feedback in that regard. So I'm definitely in the nitty gritty when it comes to building the product, both on the consumer and on the enterprise side.
So you are into the product side of it more so than the marketing side?
Yeah, I think that's definitely true. And I spent a considerable amount of time with sales maybe a few years ago and learned a lot in that regard. But today, primarily, I spend my time with product and engineering.
How are you from the University of Illinois, obviously, to finally graduating and coming out to the West Coast, and there's hundreds of people that work for you, and you're the CEO. How do you, personally, I guess, and professionally, but how do you sort of like stay ahead of the company, like within personal growth and just as like a leader?
I have gone back and forth on this question for, I guess, the better part of a decade, if not more. And to me, I pride myself on truly trying to be the dumbest person in the room. If you carry an ego and try to make these decisions on behalf of the entire company, you will run out of time very, very quickly. And so to me, it's a matter of finesse and delegation and finding great people that share your vision and can do the majority of the work. And in fact, I had an investor tell me, when I walk into a CEO's office, the CEOs we back are the ones that can put their legs up on the table and just enjoy their day because they've done such a great job of building a team around them. And really, I think it's kind of an NFL team, right? You want your best 11 players out there in the field and you're the coach or maybe the quarterback. I don't know. But at the end of the day, that's really my mentality is just finding great people that then can offload a ton of headaches off of your plate. And look, we've made mistakes. I've made mistakes over the last decade. And the people that I work best with are the ones that just, I'm the one that needs to get out of the way, if that makes sense.
It does make sense. And to further the football analogy, do you personally use coaches?
So I do actually have an executive coach, and it's pretty interesting. I tried it out maybe 4 years ago, and he's been very helpful just to get an outside, unbiased perspective on some things, but also some interesting processes that he runs, which is things like an org scan. Once in a while, we have some inefficiencies around process and maybe structure of people in an organization. So deploying him to be able to go in and just do an org scan, talk to some people, document the findings and work with us to suggest a path forward on how to get things unstuck. And we find things like, well, teams are running in a silo and we need better collaboration and communication. And it just gives us an unbiased view on how to solve that. Personally, I still use him to just bounce. It's a good sounding board. Being a CEO is a really lonely job, and I could talk to my cat all day long, but that's a one-way street. So having somebody to talk things out with and just get an unbiased view of it is really helpful.
Fair enough. And so this is, I guess, a good place to sort of segue into like projects as a loose term and sort of running the company. But projects, it can be from the product side or from the sales side. Marcin, whatever you prefer. But I would love to know, like, as a CEO, and how do you set up the team of this size to not only like be putting forth ideas, especially in an industry that moves so damn fast that you're in?
Yeah.
But how are you putting forth, getting ideas put forth, and then also sifting through and deciding that a project is worth your team's time, energy, and resources?
I think we have certainly I do have a fail fast mentality, because no matter the research can simply de-risk something. It won't necessarily give you a finite answer for the most part. So let's say we have this great product idea and it's going to cost us millions of dollars and years of work to build. Well, wouldn't we want to fail faster than that and maybe do a derivative of that idea? Basically, I'd rather try something now, because let's say we spend years building this and then nobody uses it. Well, then we just spent years of our time building something that nobody's going to use. How can we vet that idea faster? How can we partner with a company right now that provides similar products just to see if our customers would actually enjoy it, right? And I have to remind the team quite often, like, let's just try this idea before we invest ourselves into it. And we can learn a lot with just a day's worth of work versus weeks worth of work. So just having that mentality and continuously reminding people that. We structure our company in a way that we have a team that does this full time, and it's our incubation lab. And really it's focused on more the research and threat technology, not other ideas. But that's a really good tangent in terms of the threats are evolving quickly. Maybe we can find better ways of detecting what a threat is. And let's have our incubation lab spend their entire time doing that, just failing fast.
Right. And to do that, like you say, you've got to implement fast. So break big ideas down, smaller ones, implement and see where it goes.
Yeah. Like, what is it? Crawl, walk, run. And just using that framework, all right, you know what the running piece is, because every idea in everybody's mind is fully baked. But what's the crawl piece? Like, how can we get there more incrementally and learn from our failures and iterate? I read the book Crossing the Chasm, maybe 10 years too late. But it talks about that some of the greatest companies in the world started with just this incremental thinking and finding a group of champions to iterate with. So in my story, it's that those superheroes on these message boards, I knew they had a problem. I didn't fully grasp it or understand it. I started building some free tools and they were my first champions. They said, well, fix this, tweak that, do this. This is a cool idea. And just iterating with them often proved to be very useful, because we were building it for them to start. And that's what Crossing the Chasm really talks about in the first couple of chapters, is finding your set of champions that are going to help you provide feedback on the product and building kind of to their recipe.
I love it. I love it. All right, Marcin, this has been an absolute blast, man. I would love to wrap up on one final question for you, if I could.
Sure.
So after interviewing almost 500 entrepreneurs now from around the world, Marcin, I've come up with this idea of the entrepreneurial gap. So from the outside, talking to you, it seems like lots of us, we have a hard time accepting our own successes or seeing ourselves and our businesses as successful, because we're always setting bigger, loftier goals into the future. And I agree that we need to push forward and we need to keep looking forward. But I would love it if you could stop right now, turn around and look behind you. Because we've talked about Malwarebytes, we've talked about you starting it while going to school, and I'm sure we haven't touched on nearly all the highs, lows, wins, and losses. But I would love it if you could tell me, Marcin, right now, how do you feel about this whole journey up until this moment?
It feels like the boulder that I've been pushing up a hill has been getting bigger and bigger, that's for sure. And it all feels so easy 10 years ago, you know, on how we got started. And that's not true. It was incredibly difficult at the time. So I definitely agree the challenges have been growing as time goes on. And part of me is definitely eager for that challenge going forward. I have no regrets. I definitely do not. You know, I can always say, well, what if I left school 4 years or didn't spend the 4 years in school and instead invested all that time into building the company? I could say, what if I hired that person instead of this person? But at the end of the day, none of it matters. I am where I am. I'm very happy where I am. The company is where it is, and it's doing very well. So I have no regrets. And you can always say, would you change something? And I can always nitpick and pick, you know, events in the past, the lows. But I don't think I'd change anything.
I love it. I love it. Great answer, Marcin. Could you now, since we've talked about it throughout this and since its founding, Marcin, for anybody out there who doesn't know at this point, could you just give them the pitch for Malwarebytes?
Yeah, it's a very simple one. Do you think your antivirus has failed you? take the challenge, go to malwarebytes.com, click the free download and do an assessment of your computer. And you'd be surprised as to what we might find.
I love it. I love it. Malwarebytes.com is the site. We've mentioned some things throughout here, as well as Marcin's available on various social medias. I'll track them down and I'll link to them in the show notes for you. Marcin, once again, man, thanks so much for stopping by. Thanks for sharing so openly. I truly, truly appreciate it. And just keep doing what you're doing, man, because it's truly awesome to watch.
Well, I appreciate you as well. And thanks for having me on.
Well, that was such a fun conversation. I kept having to remind myself that Marcin was, he's somebody who's built like basically like a malware empire, like almost 1,000 employees at this time with offices around the world and just helping millions and millions and millions and millions of customers every year. It's mind blowing and yet so cool and so humble. I loved it. I loved every part of this conversation. And so this is hard, right? We have to go back, or I have to go back at this point, and I have to go through the conversation and whittle it down and then just choose one. One of those things, and then we're going to sort of pull it apart. I guess I'm ready. Are you ready? All right, let's do it. Let's find the hack.
If you carry an ego and try to make these decisions on behalf of the entire company, you will run out of time very, very quickly. And so to me, it's a matter of finesse and delegation and finding great people that share your vision and can do the majority of the work.
And that's the hack. Marcin. I love this. I love this. And this is growth. This is how growth happens from a CEO who has taken it from a 2-person operation up to nearly 1,000. Right? First of all, if you carry an ego and try and make all the decisions yourself, you're quickly going to run out of time. Not that it's beyond it to even go like to you're going to start making terrible decisions, blah, 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 blah. You just literally will run out of time and you won't be able to grow anymore. That's point one by Marcin. The next is you need to hire smart people. Some people who are smarter than you at what they do and can share your vision and do the majority of the work. As Marcin says, it comes down to two things, finesse and delegation. I love that. Think of that as you're growing your company. Think about finesse because, yeah, there's a whole bunch of finessing and sort of massaging of things to make them happen in the right way and to get people on board. And then there's a hell of a lot of delegation that you have to get your head around and you have to start doing. This is it. This is from one person to 750. That's how you do it. That's how Marcin has done it. And he just shared it with you. Take it. Run with it. Do something good with it. Thanks, Marcin. That was awesome. All right. Well, that brings us to the end of another episode. And I thank you so much for once again stopping by. HackTheEntrepreneur.com. Now that you're done listening, you have a place to go. Go to the website, check it out. And we've been writing a ton. I know I've been telling you this, but the blog is full of awesome stuff made specifically for you to help you grow personally as an entrepreneur and also to help your business grow at the same time. So head over there. And if you're there and you just want to maybe get a little bit deeper with us, jump onto that mailing list. You'll find a lot of ways to get on there while you're hanging out there. All right. Well, it's been a blast. I appreciate you stopping by always. And I thank you. And until next time, please keep hacking the entrepreneur.